Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Good Monday, everybody. Welcome in. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, reporter Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday. Hope you had a fantastic weekend as well. What a fun weekend of football that we had in the NFL. Super wild card weekend, and it's not over yet. My beloved Dallas Cowboys will take on Tampa Bay and the Buccaneers tonight, looking forward to that. Michelle, what's up?
Listen, Chase, I had a great weekend. I'm feeling fabulous right now. I also got another coffee. It's going to be a great day.
How'd you get that coffee? Where'd that come from?
Special delivery? I used a little thing called pay $15 to get it delivered.
There you go. It's one of those days.
It's one of those days.
Yes, you had a good catter day.
Oh, yes, I had a great catter day.
Listen, it's
always amazing when one of Kentucky's worst teams can beat one of Tennessee's best.
I cracked up this morning listening to Robbie and Rex Road when Joe says, so are you all rehiring Calipari now?
Of course. He was on probation last week. People heard on this show. People heard on Robbie and Rex Road. But listen,
he's actually been that before. But anyway, that's for other things. But.
Winning really does cure all. Winning cures everything. Remember all the Todd Downing haters, and then he wins in Green Bay, and they're like, we love you.
And then they don't win again.
And then we hate him again. But seriously, if they were to win and be in the playoffs, winning really does cure everything.
It helps, that is for sure. And speaking of winning, curing everything, had you watched the Jacksonville Chargers game in the first half, I mean, Twitter was a buzz, like, oh, Trevor Lawrence, he's a bust, 4 interceptions in the first half. Just unbelievable. You know, this is worse than Tannehill. And then what do? They turn around, they come back, and they win the thing. Which I just the whole time, I'm at the Predators game. Max and I are kind of tag-teaming pre-post and all that stuff. And I just, in my head, I'm going, they're gonna come back and win this game. They're going to figure this out. It had that feel to it. Like, the Chargers are going to choke this away. I think Staley's going to end up getting fired because of it. But and because of Mike Williams, you know, playing him when you didn't have to. But it was just unbelievable. And then what does Trevor Lawrence do afterwards? He celebrates at Waffle House with the people.
Absolutely incredible. I saw some pictures of Waffle House employees with selfies with Trevor. But, I mean, when I was watching that game and I saw how much the Chargers, they got up to that 27-0 lead, I still didn't count the Jags out. I still thought, you know, they have Doug Peterson as their coach. They have Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, he just threw two awful interceptions. But talk about the mental strength and the ability to compartmentalize. Trevor Lawrence coming back out there, throwing 4 touchdowns and then a game-winning drive. And how about that 4th-and-1 call by Doug Peterson? They think they're going for the quarterback sneak. They got 3 guys in the back. Hand to ETN and for a nice run, sets them up in field goal position, and there's the game.
Yep, and they end up getting the win, and so now they will take on the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead, which obviously is going to be quite the test. But I thought it was interesting this morning when Corey Curtis was asked about it. He said, look, of course they have a chance. Everybody has a chance this time of year. Now, do I think that Jacksonville's going to win? Am I going to pick Jacksonville? No, but – my prediction for them in this postseason has now come true. I thought they'd win a game, and they did. And it wasn't pretty, but it doesn't matter. They got the win. But Brandon Staley, the head coach for the Chargers was definitely upset after the game.
I don't think we played clean enough football. I didn't think we made enough winning plays in the second half where everyone's performing their assignment, doing it with the right technique, with the right type of energy. I just think there was a lot of little things in the second half that added up to a big result there.
And yeah, I mean, I agree. This is what I don't understand. And I've never played, you know, in the NFL, obviously, but Derek and I've talked about this some over the years. I don't understand how people, veteran athletes, veteran NFL players can allow themselves to take their foot off the gas. I know there's a human element. There's always going to be a human element. It doesn't matter how much you make or whatever, but it's like, you know what's on the line, and you have just dominated the first half. You have made their quarterback look like he's still in high school, and yet you somehow let them battle back. And to anyone out there that didn't do what I did, and I wish I had, and jumped on the Jags money line.
Ooh, mid-game money line.
Ooh, good for you. You're feeling good today.
You are feeling good. Well, Chase, I mean, that was one of the biggest storylines for this Tennessee Titans team this year. They couldn't respond in the second half. And we've seen weaknesses from this Chargers team. But the fact that you have Justin Herbert at the helm, you should be able to make plays and you should be able to put points up. I mean, they weren't able to get anything going in the second half. And they let the Jags run all over them and score 27 points and then end up winning the game. So I agree with you. If you're a veteran and you know what's on the line and you know, listen, it's win or go home. But, I mean, they say, you know, the better team always wins. And Corey Curtis actually mentioned this morning. I mean, the fact that Jacksonville was able to win after Trevor Lawrence threw four interceptions and the Chargers were able to score points and capitalize off of every single turnover, pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. But now Jacksonville finds themselves playing again. And Trevor Lawrence, even though he had four interceptions in the first half, said that they had some confidence.
And you got to keep playing with confidence. That was the one thing. Just self-talk in my head, you know, you're going back and forth. It's tough, you know, when you're struggling and not playing well. But if I don't continue to be myself, we don't have a shot to win because, you know, then I'm going to miss the plays that I usually make.
So I had this because of that and because of that performance, I had this whole thing planned for post-game for the Predators because I ended up doing the post-game show. Matthias Ekholm was going to come up, and I thought there was a point where the Predators were going to come back and win that game. They had scored two goals in 40 seconds, had tied it up, and then things got away from them in the third. But I had this whole thought process of, like, this is why they're 60 minutes. This is what – they're not 40 minutes. They're not 30 minutes. Games are 60 minutes. And even though things may have gotten away from you in a short amount of time, you got to keep playing. And so many times you see teams just pack it in because they know that, like, we're done. But – I mean, we've seen a couple of examples this year of major comebacks. The Colts squandered a lead against Minnesota. Minnesota came back. We obviously saw Jacksonville and the Chargers, and I feel like I'm forgetting one.
I mean, even Miami this weekend had a pretty big comeback. They were down, I think at most they were down 17-0 or
maybe 14-0. I think it was 17-0, and then down, like at points they'd be down by 10 and then they'd battle back. But
I know they weren't able to win, but I mean, with Skylar Thompson as your quarterback and the ability to come back on that Buffalo.
He did the best he could. I was impressed with him. The poise he showed being in that kind of environment, and they kept showing his dad, which I thought was cool. But, yeah, that was tough to be in.
How about Josh Allen with over 30 turnovers this year?
Yeah. Yeah. What's that? Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Including fumbles. Nick Wright tweeted it this morning.
Wow. Yeah. And look, that can come back to bite them as they move along.
When they play the Bengals next week.
I think what is so interesting, and you see this sometimes with Wild Card Weekend. Like, let's just go through them. San Francisco beat Seattle 41-23. Not really a huge surprise. It was funny. This was a game that, like, kind of like TCU Georgia, that I kind of talked myself into thinking Seattle might make it a game. And, you know, early on, it was a lot closer, for sure. But then San Francisco has another gear that they go to. I mean, Brock Purdy, I got to say this, San Francisco is in a fantastic position. because
are they?
They got Purdy. They got Purdy. They got obviously Trey Lance, Jimmy G,
potentially Brady.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They got a lot of options there, so I think
and for everybody saying, of course they have great weapons around Purdy, but I mean he made plays out there and he showed that hey, I can go in be confident. And yes, he has probably the best team around him, I would say, if you look at it from top to bottom. But I mean, that kid went out there and made some plays.
Yeah, he did. We already talked about 31-30 the final. Jacksonville gets the win on that field goal at the end. Miami puts up a fight against Buffalo. And the other thing with that I was going to make is you had several division games. So this was the third time that they had played each other. They had split the regular season. They'd been close games. So even though Buffalo, you know, I've seen posts about, is Buffalo a fraud? No, I just think they're two teams that are familiar with each other. And I kind of think that that's what we saw. But Buffalo ends up winning. The good teams find a way, and that's what happened. The Giants, that one felt easy to me. Like, not the game, but just picking the Giants, because Kirk Cousins just always seems to blow it in the big moment, and that's what happened.
Well, in the play calling on the Giants side, I think they had a great plan heading into Minnesota. I mean, Saquon, comeback player of the year, pretty up there with everybody else. I mean, he has had a phenomenal year. They knew how to take on Minnesota, and then at the end, Kirk Cousins had a really great game if you look at the numbers, but on that final play, you can't throw short of the sticks. You just can't, because then the Giants get the ball back and there's the game for you.
Right. And then you had the one last night with the Bengals and the Ravens. Now, that one was a little closer than I thought it was going to be. And I agree with Joe and Robbie. They totally missed a block in the back. I mean, I even said I was watching I was watching that game, and I was like, huh, yeah, that's a block in the back. That's probably coming back, and they didn't call it. So,
well, and we talked about that too. How in a situation like that, where they're in an open field, everybody's eyes are on the ball, Mark Andrews and whoever pushed him, everybody's eyes are there. Nobody is looking towards the other end zone. How is something not called? And you don't know if Cincinnati would have scored off of it. Maybe they would have only gotten a field goal off of it. And it could have been a different outcome of the game. I mean, I think the Ravens played better, but Cincinnati ended up winning because of that play.
There's no doubt. They absolutely won because of that play. So, look, I think every team can have a not so great game in the playoffs, and if they're a good enough team, they'll find a way.
Which they did,
but now you got to take it up a notch. And so we'll see as the playoffs move on. Coming up next, we're going to get into the Titans GM and offensive coordinator search, as they did have some interviews over the weekend for the GM job. There's some rumors out there about OC. We welcome your phone calls and texts as well at 615-737-1025. It's Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063, The Game. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. As the Titans have started they've been doing their GM search. I mean, if you believe Amy Adams Strong, you know, that's why she wanted to fire John Robinson in the middle of the season to get ahead of it, even though you couldn't talk to anybody until the end of the season, but whatever.
Scouting.
something like that. Anyway, they have been conducting their interviews. And obviously, it started with Ryan Cowden and Monty Austinfort, the two internal candidates. On Friday, they interviewed Rand Carthen, the 49ers director of player personnel, and Glenn Cook, the Browns assistant GM and VP of player personnel. And then on Saturday, Ian Cunningham, the Bears assistant GM, and Quentin Harris, Cardinals VP of player personnel. So those are the interviews that have been conducted thus far for the GM search. And there's two layers to this with the GM search and the OC search. I think GM is going to be Cowden or Austinfort. I think they stay internal. I have decided that I believe OC is going to be outside the family. That I think that there's something to, you know, the Bieniemy and Matt Nagy and those interviews. And look, Nagy was a bad head coach, but I actually think he's a decent coordinator. So I wouldn't hate that. I mean, pulling anybody out of the Andy Reid tree to me would be a good move. But I think they're going to go. I've kind of reversed course from my Tim Kelly, thinking that Tim Kelly was the shoe-in. And look, it may end up being that. But on one of these, you're going to see them go outside the family. And I feel with Vrabel getting a little more power, maybe not his choosing per se and not wanting the whole thing, I think Amy's going to go with somebody that he's comfortable with and already knows.
Well, and I think before this weekend, I was pretty set on, you know, I think the Tennessee Titans, they're going to stay in-house with either Cowden or Monty, Austin Fort. And then with the OC, I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure they're going to stay with Tim Kelly. But now I think after this weekend and after more reports have come out about different interviews, whether it be OC and GM, I think I'm a little bit more open or a little less sure at the fact that they will stay in-house. But one of the biggest questions on what they do with OC, I know that that will be Vrabel's decision, but I do think it kind of all plays in together with whoever your GM is as well. Because
sure,
when you're talking to an OC and the OC is like, okay, well, I look at this team right now. You weren't a playoff team. You got a pretty depleted offense. Okay, what are you going to do? What is the plan? Are you going to, you know, trade a Henry? Are you going to move off Tannehill? What is this roster going to look like? But a lot of that also depends on who you're getting in as GM. And does he want to, you know, just use the draft and free agency? Does he want to keep some of the bigger name guys on the team? So I feel like, I mean, this needs to be coming quick as to who is your GM, because then you got to get an offensive coordinator. And before we know it, I mean, the divisional rounds are this weekend. Before you know it, the combine's going to be here. The draft's going to be here. Teams are already in the postseason. The Super Bowl's going to be here in a couple weeks. You know, you've seen all you need to see in other right. GMs. And I know Amy Adams said, we'll wait until the Super Bowl's over if need be. But they need to move somewhat quickly, I would say, yeah, on this, Chase.
Well, because, I mean, you got to start getting ready for the combine and all that. And one thing to consider, too, is you're going to hire a new GM. The scouting staff is what it is right now. They'll get through the combine. They'll get through the draft. Then you'll probably see some turnover on the scouting side of things. That's typically what happens. That's what we saw when J-Rob was hired. They made some big changes with the scouts. You know, he kind of went through what was there and then made his changes after the draft. You're kind of at that point where the draft process has already started. So you need that. But to your point, and I think you are absolutely 100% spot on, now you got to figure out what you want the roster to be. And somewhere in somebody's mind, Mike Vrabel being at the top of the list, they need to already know, yeah, we want to roll with Tannehill. No, we want to look at something different. And we'll get into some of those rumors that are out there.
Oh, we will.
But you kind of got to have a good idea. And then the GM, you know, needs to be on the same page with that, because I agree, you know, whoever the OC is has to fit, you know, the personnel that you have, or they have to be the type of OC that they can adapt. I mean, I used to say this about Ken Wisenhunt, and what got Ken Wisenhunt fired is he wanted everybody to adapt to his offense. He wouldn't adapt to the players. And that made him a terrible head coach and a bad OC, and eventually got him fired. And so, because he wanted Jake Locker to be something that he wasn't, and he ran him out of the league, mm-hmm. Essentially. And look, Locker wasn't going to be I think we kind of knew he wasn't going to be a franchise quarterback, but still, I think he could have gotten more out of him. But that's going to be big. And, you know, the Eric Bieniemy stuff, I find to be very interesting, because every year he interviews to be a head coach. You think, okay, this is the time, and maybe this year is the time. But maybe what's holding teams back is, well, he's the OC by title, but he's not calling plays.
So it wouldn't be a lateral move. If he were to get the job here, he would have the opportunity to call plays. But on the flip side, in Vrabel's after-the-season press conference said, you know, I don't want – coaches looking for other jobs. I want their full focus to be on this team, but I could very much see Eric Bieniemy's already been interviewing for head coaching jobs. It looks like if he were to move to Tennessee, from the outside looking in, it would be more of a pit stop like a Matt LaFleur. Mm-hmm. Come here, call plays for a couple years, and if you're a good OC, you're going to get a head coaching job because this league is so loves offensive minds.
Yeah, well, and here's where you can tie all this together, because again, you and I are on the same page. I think it could potentially take him a year, be 1 year, like Matt LaFleur. LaFleur was the OC for a year, and parlayed honestly, an average offense into a head coaching job. But because he had such a pedigree or such potential, I should say, the Packers took a chance on him, and it's been a success because he's had Aaron Rodgers.
Helps with Aaron Rodgers at the helm.
But with Bieniemy, and if you believe some of the things that are out there, that, you know, could the Titans make a run at Brady? Could they make a run at Rodgers? Could they run it back with Tannehill but just build around him? You know, that could fit into Bieniemy's plan of, okay, he comes in, he's a play caller for a year, and then he probably gets the head coaching job. Team C, like, okay, he can call plays, let's do it.
Well, and it could be that one run it back here, if that's what the Tennessee Titans want to do, and you want to go and get Brady, and you want to go and get Eric Bieniemy, but also, too, you're taking the risk of, he's been sitting behind Andy Dalton for He's been sitting behind Andy Reid watching him call plays for a year, but he's never actually been in the seat doing it. So you're also taking a risk at that, too, and not hiring an OC who's been in that position before. So even though, yeah, he's a young rising star, it still is somewhat of a risk.
Oh, I think so. I definitely think, you know, in anything – now, Matt Nagy, I think, could be interesting because he's been an OC, he's called plays, he's been a head coach. That one may have some less risk to it. And, you know, he's been in that Andy Reid tree for a while. But, there's going to be risk. But, I mean, there's risk going outside the family and going, you know, going and getting somebody, you know, you don't like. I mean, I look back when the Titans hired Jim Schwartz to come in and be a senior defensive assistant and basically an advisor. I thought that was a very interesting move, to the point that I thought it wasn't Vrabel, that Vrabel was told to do it. Now, I've since found out that it wasn't necessarily Vrabel's idea, but he was on board with it, and it worked. I think it's been beneficial to Vrabel. I think it's been beneficial to Shane Bowen, you know, to have him in there. And, you know, I would expect, I mean, Schwartz has gotten some interviews for DC jobs. I could see him being a DC again with another team. But he showed me that he is willing to go outside his comfort zone. And I think you have to be willing to do that as a successful head coach in this league. And I think you should do it here.
Well, and I think Mike Vrabel's a very smart man. And he knows that this offense needs a pretty big upgrade if they want to win football games next year. And I think he's open to, obviously, interviewing other people. We've seen a bunch of different names thrown around there, a bunch of different people that the Tennessee Titans have requested to interview for this position. So when people say, you know, he needs a Patriot-like-minded guy, and I get that. I get, you know, what he came up in the NFL with. He was under a Belichick, and they have all that similar mindset. But it doesn't say that hiring somebody from the outside can't have that mindset either. Just maybe didn't come from a Patriot tree, but he could still find somebody who has the same mindset. They're still on the same page when it comes to work ethic, when it comes to the way they view a certain team and how they want to approach the way they play.
615-737-1025. What do you think about Matt Nagy or Eric Bieniemy being a potential offensive coordinator for the Titans? Or is there another name that is out there that you'd like them to be interested in? 615-737-1025. Plus, there's one potential OC that pulled such a boss move that I am so on board with. We'll discuss that coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life, create them custom hair loss solutions for men and women. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, reporter Nick Kieser behind the glass. All right, Taking your calls, your text, 615-737-1025. Titans offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, Matt Nagy, and supposedly Nagy hasn't even responded to the interview request yet, which it's kind of like, is that like a Facebook friend request? It just sits there for a while and you don't.
It's like, I see you.
I see it, but I'm not.
I see you in the wings.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready to accept it yet. I'm just going to let you wait for a minute. But there's one potential. There was one potential candidate that I never thought was a real candidate for the Titans, but a name that was out there who pulled a just absolute boss move. Cliff Kingsbury, former head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, a lot of teams. This was Peter Schrager of Fox Sports and the NFL Network. Multiple teams have reached out to Kingsbury about their OC vacancies. However, the coach has told inquiring teams that he, quote, bought a one-way ticket to Thailand, end quote, and has no interest in interviewing at the moment.
Kingsbury said, peace, I'm going on vacation. Have fun in the playoffs, everyone.
This is what I would I would jot this down. This is just my thought. I don't have any fact to back this up. I think Kingsbury takes the year off because he can. He doesn't have to coach. I think he goes back to college. I would put Mississippi State as a possible landing spot for him. He was cut from the Mike Leach tree, coached with him, similar offense. They have promoted from within, which was the right thing to do at the time after the passing of Mike Leach. But I could see that being a one-year thing. I don't think Kingsbury is a great college head coach. I mean, he got fired at Texas Tech and then got, you know, the job at Arizona. He could find himself in the Nick Saban head coaching rehabilitation program. Never know. But because that could be an interesting fit. But I would pay attention to that. That I think he could potentially land, you know, at a school like a Mississippi State, if not Mississippi State.
Yeah, I definitely don't rule it out of the question. I mean, I think you made a couple great points, especially him being cut from the same Mike Leach tree as a lot of these other offensive minds. But I mean, his year in Arizona, or last couple of years in Arizona, a lot of just drama too, with Kyler Murray especially. I think he's probably like, one way ticket to Thailand, I'm gonna get out of this for a little bit, peace, and I'll revisit coaching. But he can, that's the thing. And we rarely do see it though, when coaches get fired. They just want to jump right back into it, get another job as quick as possible. But good for him taking time, leaving for a bit. Who knows when he'll come back? Maybe he'll come back right in August, right in time to start college football season.
Yes, indeed. There was a text you wanted to read.
Yes, Chase, I was just going to read it. So we got Marlon from Murfreesboro. I think hiring Bieniemy and keeping Tim Kelly in the wings when Bieniemy goes to get a head coaching job after 1 year is a good idea, especially if you're hiring from within for GM. Couple thoughts on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tim Kelly, he has to be willing to, you know, be the passing game coordinator again for the next year. Not sure what that dynamic was like when he came from Houston to here. Was his conversation with Vrabel like, hey, you know, if you prove yourself and if Todd Downing is not the answer at OC, we would love to potentially maybe promote you while also interviewing on other candidates. But is he looking to still be an offensive coordinator and eventually a head coach in this league? But yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good idea. You bring somebody, a young star in. It's not as big a transition if he does get a head coaching job after 1 year. You've got Tim Kelly in there 3 years now, but a lot of it depends on, is Tim Kelly willing to do that, and is Bieniemy willing to, you know, come in here too with having Tim Kelly in the wings, however he's involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very good point, but I think sometimes you just kind of have to roll with it. You know, because Tim Kelly, I thought was, I mean, he had some okay years as OC, but he also had Deshaun Watson, so that, and
New
Hopkins.
Well, look at Deshaun Watson now, and I know he hasn't played in 2 years, but.
Sure, but I mean, you know, at the time, he had Deshaun Watson, who was, you know, hot on the scene, and then DeAndre Hopkins, too. So, I mean, he had some pretty stout guys to run that offense. So, that's a part of it. But the more the Titans look outside, and the more names and good names that you hear attached to them, the more I think less and less it'll be Tim Kelly. And last week I was pretty adamant that I thought they would go with Tim Kelly. But, you know, I've kind of thought about it. Like, the more you hear them connected to other names, now they could circle back around and go, He knows the players. That's what we're going to go with. But then do you start to connect the dots that they are going to run it back? You know, so.
Well, Joe brought up a good point this morning in, you know, if they decide to go with an Eric Bieniemy and that style offense, of how would a Derrick Henry fit into that style of offense?
Yeah.
Because it's not surrounded by your run game like the Tennessee Titans are right now. So, you know, if you are looking to get a guy like that, what could this offense look like next year? And would Derrick Henry be a part of it, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question. Now, I think you can change up the offense and still have Derrick Henry be a part of it. He's just not the focal point. And honestly, that's what they got to get to. I mean, I think
pay him a little less.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with having him on the team and having him being a key part of the offense, but he doesn't have to be the offense like he has been, because I don't think he can be anymore.
Well,
I mean, I think that's what we've started to see.
That's how you can sustain him for a couple more years, is not needing him to have 30-plus carries a game for you to just be in the game and maybe win, because he is your only offensive threat. But, you know, a year under your belt with Chig and a Traylon, and maybe you go out, get a veteran wide receiver, and you can have Derrick Henry, just turned 29. You could pay him a little bit less, but he could still be a playmaker for you in this offense, but also not have to play so frequently and just have that, all the guys on him and just the regression of his body.
Yeah. I mean, he had 1,500 yards this year.
Which is insane.
Which is fine. I mean, that's more than fine.
Second rushing in the league, just behind Jacobs.
Let's say that the offense changes and you get Treylon Burks some receiver help. And I'm going on the assumption Tannehill's quarterback.
Okay.
You fix the offensive line, obviously, or begin to fix the offensive line, greatly improve the offensive line from what it was last year. And let's say that, you know, Henry's stats drop to, you know, 1,200 yards. Okay. I mean, I don't hate that. I mean, that's fine. As long as you're getting the production from the receivers and tight ends in that way, and maybe you're using Hassan Haskins a little bit more. Maybe you bring back DeAndre Hilliard and use him a little bit more. I mean, as long as that production is going to use somewhere else, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, and if you just, you know, maybe get a – this is a name that Teron Davenport threw out
there. Did
I
call him DeAndre?
Yeah, you did.
Dontrell.
I got confused for a second. I was like, wait, you were thinking Foreman.
I was.
DeAndre Foreman.
I just combined a bunch of names is what I did. Dontrell.
But you look at an Andre Dillard from the Eagles. Maybe you could get him in free agency to add to your offensive line. You say a Ben Jones comes back. You re-sign Nate Davis, Nicholas Petit-Frere. Second year in the league. So, okay, so your O-line's looking a bit better. You keep Tannehill. Your wide receiver room looks That's probably your the biggest need for an upgrade. Okay, you go out and get maybe a free agent. You draft a guy in the draft, and that's not a bad offense.
Yeah.
You got Chig. You got an Austin Hooper another year. You got Traylon. You hope Nick Westbrook-Ikhine can be your fourth or fifth wide receiver. You hope that you can beef that room up a little bit between the draft and maybe free agency.
Woods is probably gone.
Yes.
Unless he takes a significant pay cut.
Unless he takes a significant pay cut and you can go get a star wide receiver somewhere. I know people will probably roll their eyes at DeAndre Hopkins. But
yeah,
I know he's older. But if you're trying to run it back one more year?
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of feel like they're for the third year in a row going to trade for a receiver.
I do too.
I just kind of get that sense that that's probably what they're going to end up doing.
And
whoever that is.
Does this team look a little bit more attractive if you propose what your plan is to maybe a say player?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I need to go look and see what teams are going to be in cap trouble and who could be trade candidates. But coming up next, we'll get into our daily power play. The Predators were in action over the weekend. They play today and tomorrow as well, all at home. We'll discuss that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's time for the daily power play.
He scores! A
power play goal for the Predators.
Covering the Predators in the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Searles.
Now on Jason Michelle.
Predators back in action tonight against the Calgary Flames at Bridgestone Arena. Max Herz will have pregame at 6, the puck drop at 7. They'll also have the makeup game against Columbus tomorrow night with a puck drop of 7. So look forward to that. There's a lot of home games coming up. But they drop 1-2 Buffalo 5-3 on Saturday. And I was at the game, Michelle, you know, keeping up with the playoffs, the Jacksonville Chargers game, and then you know, seeing what's going on the ice with the Predators. And Jeff Skinner got on the board first. And you know what, Nick, I was talking to Max about this, that, like, Jeff Skinner, he's not the same Jeff Skinner that he used to be, but I just, like, I saw he has 18 goals, and I go, I mean, he can still hurt you any night. He didn't have to be that superstar anymore like he was.
No, absolutely not. And I think the key thing with him is he's been put in the right system, and they've really put guys around him. And I was talking to my guest on Behind Enemy Lines, and I had asked him who really stood out to him as a surprise so far this year, and it's Dylan Cousins. And I know that he's played some with Jeff Skinner this year. But Jeff, you know, he was with the Hurricanes for a long time, and he just has kind of found himself recently, I would say, with the Sabres. And I've liked watching him play because he was a really good goal scorer. He was a 30 goal scorer at one point, but yeah, he was a really good player on Saturday night.
Tage Thompson, though, whew, that guy, he is a heck of a player. But Predator score 2 goals in 40 seconds in the second period. Jeremy Lauzon his third, Ryan Johansson his 10th. And it's a 3-3 game. That was the crazy part. It was 1-1 after one, 3-3 after two. So we're thinking, all right, this is going to be back and forth. And they pull away. Two goals by Okpozo and Jack Quinn, and 5-3 would be the final. I had Matthias Ekholm up in Barrel House afterwards. And, you know, you just kind of knew. Like, there were the little things that they did wrong hurt them. And that has been kind of their season. And I know that John Hines was asked about this season being like a yo-yo, that you win one, you lose one, you win two, you lose two, and it's just kind of a back and forth, and that's been their season to this point.
John, your team wins one, loses one, wins two, loses two, and a three-game losing streak now. Do you get the feeling like you're kind of stuck and can't quite get over the hump there at this point in the season?
Well, you know, you want to be able to string more together. You know, as you said, it's like two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. And it's that, you know, that consistency to win more regularly. That part of our game, that part of our mindset has to get better. Part of our performance of the consistency level has to be better game to game and multiple games in a row.
And they have a chance to really get that going in the next couple of weeks, because outside of Thursday, they're at Bridgestone Arena. Thursday, they're in St. Louis, quick little up and back road trip. But they got the two games starting tonight against Calgary and Columbus. Then they're back Saturday against L.A. Winnipeg's here on Tuesday. Jersey's here on Thursday. And then they hit the All-Star break. And so this is a very important stretch with five of their next six at home that they really need to take care of those. Because if they can do that and get those points – you got to like the position that they're in going into the All-Star break, but they got to take care of business, and it's not going to be easy.
Well, and Chase, you mentioned how important this stretch is. We saw how the Predators started off this season, not the best, and definitely not as good as we expected them, especially with the moves they made and, you know, Niederreiter and Ryan McDonagh. Okay, and then they get on a bit of a hot streak. But now, just like you mentioned, kind of the inconsistencies we've been seeing, but we're already more than halfway through this NHL season. And if you could pick up a couple points before this All-Star break, you get some rest in your guys, get some legs under your guys, because once you come out of it, you know, you're in that home stretch of the season, right? 20 plus games left, and you're fighting for a playoff spot at this point. So it is very important, especially tonight when you've got Calgary coming in. You already beat them over in Europe at the beginning of this year, but Nazem Kadri, already 17 goals on the season. You know that he's going to be a danger.
You didn't beat.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Nazem Kadri, he's going to be, you know, one of the biggest threats on the ice.
Kadri is a guy that I really wish could be on the Predators. I would love to have Nazem Kadri on the Predators because he's such a pain. and you hate playing against him. He's one of those. I mean, who's a guy that Kentucky goes up against that you wish he played for Kentucky?
I mean, Hunter Dickinson for Michigan.
Yeah.
Just a big dude who,
like, he's just a thorn in your side.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, you got to go up against those guys. But yeah, Kadri, you know, is a big reason why Colorado won a Stanley Cup because of they added that grit. They added that guy that can score. But Calgary's fighting for a playoff spot just like you are. And so that's why tonight is very, very important as they face the Flames at Bridgestone Arena. And, you know, Calgary lost a lot because in the offseason. They tried to fill it, you know, but I think that they've done okay. You know, but they're still not where they want to be as they fight for a playoff spot. Predators did beat them in Calgary 4-1 on November 3rd. So that's the last time these two teams met, and they will do it again tonight. But I would assume we're going to see Saros tonight, Lincoln in tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln in missed, a start. We saw Askarov take that spot, but is that what you think they'll do, Nick?
Oh, 100%. I think if you look at how they played this weekend, and hey, maybe even Lanky plays tonight. I don't know, because if you look at it, both of these next two teams are very good opponents, and they are both Central Division, they're both Western Conference opponents. The Flames are no joke, and they have good goaltending tonight, so it's going to be harder for the Preds to get after them. I think tomorrow night might be the more important game standings-wise. Tonight's just a confidence booster if you do beat the Flames. You could go either way here tonight. I don't know. I mean, Lankinen, if I was coach, I may go Lankinen tonight because he needs to play and get his legs back under him. Because tomorrow night's going to be a good test for Saros against a team that is also hungry for a playoff spot.
Yep, I agree. But I think they roll Saros tonight. But, you know, he's been playing well. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. This is what I don't want to see them get back into. Is there was a stretch, and I mean, he won the Carolina game for them. There's no doubt that he won the Carolina game for them.
Yes.
But there were times he was playing great, and they weren't playing, you know, great in front of him, and they need to do that.
Well, and Chase, that's what I was going to ask you. How important is the defense in the game tonight, and not putting Saros or Lankinen, if he plays, in a position like that where they have to be essentially perfect because of how many shots on goal the other team's getting. You know, even Askarov the other night, they put him in some positions that he shouldn't have been in. So how important do you think tonight is the defense going to be for the Preds?
It's huge. And, I mean, you look at one of the goals the other night, Fabro, I mean, he got caught out of position, and it burnt him. And Fabro has been the first to admit it. There's too many times that he'll make a little mistake and it burns him. Lozon, you know, it's happened. And so, even Jost, I mean, Roman Josi is the best defenseman, one of the best defensemen in the league, but you know, he can't do everything. And so I think that they have to, and Matias was talking about that the other night, they have to really shore up their game and be able to help their goaltenders out, whoever it is. And, you know, I think that you get spoiled sometimes because you have that all-star goaltender behind you and you know that he's got your back. It's going to, if you make a mistake, he's going to be able to clean it up. But you can't bank on that every time. You got to help him out too. And I think that is a point of emphasis for them to try and get off this three-game losing streak.
No, Chase, I think – perfect point there. And before Saros, you had Pekka, right? This team, we talked about it last week, has had the luxury of having some phenomenal goaltenders. And you've got Askarov coming up right now, obviously played for the Preds a couple games ago. But, you know, sometimes you need to put in your mentality, oh, you know, Juice will save the day. No, you have to not put him in those positions because you also need to save him for the playoffs and for the end of the year, and you can't be putting him in these positions because at the end of the day you just have to play better defense, because at some point those goals are going to go in no matter how incredible Saros is playing. It's just not fair to him.
And I think what I hope happens is they get on a bit of a winning streak and get some confidence, and then some of those starts that Lankinen didn't get, they can go replace them to your point, to give Saros a little bit of a break so you know that he's fresh for the playoffs. But they, I mean, you have to use him right now as you're fighting for a playoff spot. And nothing against Lincoln, but that's just kind of how it is. So we'll see how it all turns out tonight. Max Hurd will have pregame for you at 6 on these airwaves. Coming up next, we dive back into the Titans. Who's at quarterback for them next year? There are some rumors out there. We'll discuss
Ooh, yes, there
coming
are.
Up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.